So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
And you see, senior official referee Rudy Charles following up as well. He has warned him repeatedly to get it back towards the ring.
And look at this. He's sitting right there and he's telling him don't. And he pushes Rudy Charles out of the way.
And again.
He tie-faced him right there, Mike.
Oh, he just clotheslined the referee. Rudy Charles knocked out. Look out.
He's calling for the back. And he puts him through the bar.
Oh, my God.
He puts him right through the bar. You gotta be kidding me!
You're right, Rudy Charles!
Sting.
Rudy Charles calling for the bell! You can see Rudy Charles trying to explain the situation to Sting. Let's see if we can hear now what's going to happen. Rudy Charles talking. Let's hear officially.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Rudy Charles has no choice but to disqualify Sting. Therefore, the winner of the match and new NWA World Heavyweight Champion is the Monster, Opus!
No way! Come on, you can't do it! You can't do it!
I mean, Don, think about it, though. Since the inception of TNA, the rule has been in place. You can lose the championship if you're disqualified. You can lose the title on a disqualification, and that's exactly what we've seen.
Fried.
That's all right. Yours is probably
1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2.
We've always
one,
got a test.
1-2-1-2-1-2.
Right? Check. 1-2.
All kinds of testing.
You always need testing. Why won't you?
Mandatory testing.
Why aren't you going to be testing on Thursday?
Because I'll be going to. Actually, I might be back on Thursday. So.
Oh, so maybe you will be.
Yeah, maybe
some
I
testing.
Will. Maybe I will do some testing.
Where are you going?
We're going to Montreal to talk.
Montreal.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to.
Montreal.
Fuck it. Yeah.
You know who's probably listening to this right now?
Who?
Our good pal, Pat LaProd.
He's not. No. I don't think he listens to this. He might listen to The Law.
No. I'm sure he's listening to this. He's a big fan of Genesis.
Yeah.
The band, the event,
the game console.
The book of the Bible.
Wow. Cool.
The video game contraption.
Yeah, I just said that.
Oh.
Yeah, you just don't pay attention.
I need to listen better.
Yeah.
Do you listen when you have conversations with people, like actually listen?
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah. I mean, especially when I notice when you're trying to think of something to say, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I've stopped now. This really hit me a while back when I was online somewhere and some fighter I had just interviewed. It was like, I can't even remember the fighter or the story, but it was like, reveal so-and-so. And I was like, fuck, I just interviewed this person and they couldn't have shared that with me. And I click on the story and it was an excerpt from my interview. And that was a real turning point for me where it's like, I have to do a better job here of listening.
I know what it's like.
I don't go into any interviews now with anything written down. I just I go in and I just talk. And because that's not normal to be just thinking of what you're going to say in response to it. And I do that naturally in everyday conversation. If I'm not talking to someone I'm familiar with, it's very much an interview situation for me. I'm thinking of what I'm going to say next and I'm not listening. Mm.
But I think it takes a certain level of comfort to be able to go into an interview without notes.
Definitely.
And I think you've obviously achieved that. But, anytime I've done interviews and I don't do them very often. But when I do, I feel so.
You refuse sometimes.
I just don't think
I prefer doing interviews with you.
Okay, well, thanks. But, for me to go in without notes, I feel totally lost. And I think I worry about, just getting stuck with nothing to say. Because, you just kind of get caught up in the moment. And, I'm susceptible to, my brain just freezing and not knowing what to do.
Oh, I'm sure everyone goes through that.
Yeah.
You just have a blank.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very awkward when you break down an interview. It's so unnatural.
Yeah.
Like the idea that even in person, I prefer doing interviews in person with somebody like this right here. I prefer this way more over Skype.
I prefer Skype.
Well, you're just, you don't like me. So
no,
that's
I do. I do like you. It's okay. Just, it's just the fact that when we're doing radio, you know, it's different when we're talking and I can only gauge your reaction by your voice versus seeing your, the ability to visually see how you're communicating. Like when when I'm talking to you right now, I can see the look on your face and I can see, you know, your hand gestures, and that in itself is able to communicate a lot differently. But I feel like when we're doing radio, we should just, you know, try to gauge as much, to be able to communicate as much as possible just with our voices. So maybe I'll just close my eyes the rest of this.
We'll see if all things were equal and we had, okay, fine. Don't look at me. He's literally closing his eyes right now. For me, like this setup we have, Wei, this is where we do all our interviews. Setup is, oh yeah, you can't see. Let me describe. There's a phone here. There's a tiny little mixing board. It's not a great setup. So typically now, when I do an interview, instead of just talking to someone, and that be, when you go into an interview, that should be your whole focus. Is I'm talking to someone, I want to have a good interview. I've got to think of 10 million other things. Like, is the phone connection working? Can the guy hear me on the other line?
Right.
Is there hiss that's going to come out that I've got to fix this interview with? And all these other things, all these other factors that drive me insane that I don't have to worry about in this. This, my whole focus is TNA Genesis with Wei Ting.
No, but you still kind of have to worry about that sometimes.
All those times on Skype where I'll lose you.
Well,
especially towards the end of our Skype days where I don't know if you got a different connection or something, but it was like there would be, like you would cut out at times. Oh, it drives me insane.
Yeah, okay, but think about all the times that we were recording in person and we lost files. Lost recordings.
We talk about that, but it's very rare that happens.
Right, because, you know, considering how many we do, you're true.
Our win-loss percentage is pretty astounding.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but I think once you figure out those technological hurdles, or if you have somebody, you know, just a dedicated producer to manage all that stuff for you.
Well, we don't have a dedicated producer to this show.
Well,
anybody out there, put your hand up.
Yeah, but if we did, you wouldn't have to worry about that.
You know what? I wanna throw it out to people, because I want to
come work for us.
No,
for free.
Yeah, we're looking at alternate ways to just disperse some of our law shows, and I'm curious if it would be helpful to those, because this is very time consuming on our part to venture out into the SoundClouds of the world, putting the shows on YouTube. I'm curious if people would find that easier, because I know a lot of people listen to shows, just throw them up on SoundCloud, etc.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if we're talking to the right people, though, because I assume anybody who's already listening has found a way.
Well,
that
maybe
works
some
for them.
People they hate listening it this way. This is a chore for them.
Maybe.
I can't imagine. I wouldn't imagine me sitting down and listening to a show for 90 minutes on YouTube. But maybe if I'm at work and I'm just data entry, maybe that's an easy way.
Yeah,
I have a shitty internet connection at work, which some workplaces do.
I do it all the time, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you just like, I mean, YouTube is really the best music player that's ever been created. You know, just a library that's accessible immediately. You just type a thing in and it's already up there. I mean, I think the reason why, like, some of the most viewed videos on YouTube are music videos is because of replay value and accessibility. And, you know, I think the same could be said for podcasts. Once, like, bandwidth issues start becoming less and less of an issue, I could totally see people listening to us on YouTube.
This past weekend, I did some traveling outside of the province. In fact, I went to Montreal.
Oh, yes.
And I downloaded off of YouTube all these Howard Stern interviews and a Bill Burr comedy set. They were fantastic.
Okay, great.
So downloaded them right off of YouTube.
Yeah, you yourself watch or listen to things on YouTube.
Yeah, so I guess that goes. It's not like you have to stream it. You can go to some site where you can just download the audio of a YouTube file, for instance.
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of the same thing you're doing, just a different website.
Okay.
Though I don't know how we benefit from
we
that.
We should though make me a video component. We should consider doing
We have that option now.
Yeah, we do. What do you mean?
Beautiful studio that has been built on the other side of the tracks here.
Oh, really?
Have you not seen this thing?
I didn't know about this.
I don't know if people would want to look at us for 90 minutes, like this, for instance.
Again, I think the video will change the conversation.
I think it might.
Right now, we're basically doing this in a cave. You know, we do this show in like a really dimly lit, disgusting room.
One light is burnt out above.
Yeah, like it looks like a drug deal is going on with microphones around for people who don't know what we're talking
Spare
about.
Spare mics, a blank TV screen.
But, you know, to step into that professional studio with beautiful lights and
all You know what's weird about that studio, though? It's all surrounded by glass, and I don't need people walking by, because no one can walk by and not make a face or look, and it throws me.
Like,
I hated that at our old place, where people would come up to the window. It drives me insane.
We'll have to come during, like, off hours and do the show.
Maybe that's where we'll do Raw. I love recording Raw here now at 1 in the morning, late on a Monday night, other than the week where I set an alarm off here.
Yeah. So what are you saying? Are you making the announcement now? We're going to make...
No. I'm just asking people out there what they want.
Okay. But basically, you just announced to everybody that the Fight Network has created a...
Oh, I'm saying it's created.
Video podcast.
Whether we have the incentive to move down the hall to record this, that's another issue. I mean, who's going to record this thing? I'm not doing more work than I have to. And video, that's going to fall on your shoulders.
I'm sure we can get a Fight Network intern to just hit record and monitor levels. That way you can focus on doing your thing.
Well, there's always... Where there is a will, there is a way.
All right.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Yeah.
I know people, they have many pet peeves of mine and yours. I think at the top of people's list are our exhaustion levels. So you're going to hate this show. I am exhausted. I am sore. And you just seem, you're out of sorts today. I think you have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Work-wise, you're being sent to Montreal, mere hours.
I'm
tired.
Already there, actually.
I'm very tired. I don't even know how you're doing this.
I'm fine. No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
Why? Is it unprofessional to talk about how tired we are?
To some of our listeners, it is very
unprofessional. Maybe we're just diseased. Maybe you and I have like low T levels. For sure we have low T levels. They're guaranteed.
But you know what my biggest problem is when it comes to just sleep is that I will be up super late 5 nights of the week. So Tuesday and Wednesday are like, no, not even Wednesday, because that's when I would record Review at Impact. But that's out the window now. So for instance, Tuesday. I'm usually up the prior 5 nights till about 2 in the morning.
And that's because of the weekend and then the law.
The weekend, the law,
Review Raw.
All of that stuff.
Yeah.
So Tuesday night, I try to go to sleep like 11. And my body is just not accustomed to going to sleep at that hour. So I will just lie in bed for like, I'm not exaggerating this, 3 hours until around 2.
What?
And I'll get up. And now I get up. If I can't go to sleep, I'm tired though, because I've done jiu-jitsu. I come home and I'm tired, but my body won't go to sleep.
And why is that? Like, are you just thinking? Is your mind just not stopped thinking?
Sometimes I go through that, where if I have a busy work day, I can't help but think of all the things I'm planning in my head to do the next day. So that's kind of on me.
So you're thinking about, like, TNA at, like, 2 in the morning.
TNA is not in my priorities. I'm more thinking of stuff we have to shoot the night. Wednesday is a very busy production day for the Fight Network. Yeah, we have to shoot lots of things. That's usually the day I will bank a ton of interviews for the MMA report. I do the show with Court on Wednesdays. So Wednesday is a very busy day, and I'm planning this. I don't write shit down. I put it all in my head, and so I'm filing it in my head at night. Mm-hmm. And then I'm up so late on Tuesday when I'm tired, and then Wednesday I'm exhausted.
Have you ever thought about taking like a midday nap?
I'm at work, though.
Once you get home, you take a nap for an hour or two.
Well, it's like I get home around 6.
Yeah.
I leave for jiu-jitsu 45 minutes later.
Okay.
I don't really have that time to sleep. And I'm not a very good midday sleeper. I can't just sleep on command.
Okay. Well,
Fix this way.
Yeah.
I'm looking for an answer here. You got nothing.
I got nothing, no.
Jesus Christ.
You should,
cocaine?
No.
No?
No, I don't think that'll help. You know what? Be like John Cena. Sleep like 3 hours a day. Isn't that what he does? 5 hours?
I'm not familiar with his sleeping habits.
He's talked about this in the past. He only sleeps like 5 hours.
Do you know how much feedback I got to last week's show?
No.
In terms of Survivor Series, you know, the reasonable amount. But that belt story?
Oh, yeah.
I sometimes wonder how much effort we go into reviewing a show when a simple belt story is sufficient for most.
Yeah, should we not? Should we just stop talking about wrestling?
Do you want to wrap up the show right now?
Okay,
this might be it for people.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we'll just, you know, talk about more stories.
About chat about your belts. Jacket.
My jacket's disgusting.
I'll just try and make like a clothing observation every single week that people might not necessarily think of.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it. Mm-hmm. Pros, cons, our own experiences. And then we'll call it a day.
What is your favorite article of clothing that you own?
Ooh.
Like, what is the thing that you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to save this for this day?
No, it's a good question. I really like, I don't know. I'm not a huge clothing person, so to speak. I have very basic clothes.
No, you don't have to be. It's like having a favorite food.
I mean, I'm going through that transition right now where I don't have that favorite pair of jeans. I think everyone has them. You know, your favorite pair that you like to wear.
Okay.
And I don't have those right now.
Why not? What happened?
I just, anytime I go to buy jeans, I'll like, you know, they fit, they're fine, they'll do.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do.
Did you previously have a favorite pair of jeans?
I've always gone through phases where I've got that one magic pair that it's like, today's a good day,
yeah.
I'm wearing the good pair that I love to wear.
Yeah.
Clothing definitely has a mental impact, I think, on your overall attitude.
Of course.
There's days when I'll wake up and I just look in the mirror and it's like, ugh. And that'll totally down my day for me.
Yeah.
Like,
fuck this guy.
You know, I'm not any visual miracle by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other days where it's like, yeah, good outing today.
Yeah,
I'm ready to go to work and look like this. And you'll have a great day as a result of it. So I think clothing has a huge impact on that. Today, I feel like shit.
Why? You look fine.
I'm wearing my 10-year-old belt. Got this fucking shirt that could probably be ironed. Not a good day.
John, you look fine, man. You look fine.
Need a haircut?
You do not need a haircut. Your hair is like...
Get my haircut tonight.
Your hair is like 2 millimeters long. Like, what
should
are you
going to
do? One.
Yeah, like it's short. Short and to the point.
Okay, then. You know, you should consider getting a new belt now. It's a 10-year-old belt.
I do have another belt.
You do? Okay, good. You know, your jeans are fine. I don't know why you're so...
Exactly, they're fine.
What, you want a pair of jeans where it make people say, wow, holy shit, look at those
what do you
jeans.
What do you wear?
Like my favorite article of clothing?
Is it one of your 20-year-old t-shirts that you had as a 10-year-old child that still fit?
I have a
your
ton.
Your Carlsberg shirt?
That would actually belong to my brother.
It's a hand-me-down.
It's a hand-me-down, yes, that I like. I like that shirt. My favorite article of clothing. I have a lot
of... that Gracie hoodie.
At the moment, I mean, it's just the most comfortable thing I own, probably.
It fits you well. What is it, a medium?
It's a medium, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good
All
size.
All my clothes are medium. Unless I'm in
you
Asia.
You don't want one of those baggy hoodies. Remember when we got those WrestleMania hoodies this year from when we went down there?
I had a medium.
You got a medium?
Yeah.
Mine's gigantic. I think it's an extra large. Like, it's so big, I can't wear it out. I can't even fit my coat around it. It's so big.
No, well, yeah.
How did you get the medium?
I probably looked in the bag.
Fuck.
And then returned the one that I... until
right
I
as you
on.
Were stealing the Wyatt lamp?
I did not steal that lamp, okay?
You listen, upset some people.
For people who don't know, at WrestleMania this year, in press row, it was very dark in that stadium, in the, what was the name of the stadium?
It was,
The Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
Yes, not the Silverdome.
No. So they had, like, these little lanterns, these little LED lanterns that looked just like the Bray Wyatt lanterns, except they weren't gas, you know. You just had a little switch in there.
Yeah, just like a little light inside.
I just thought that was such a brilliant little touch. And I
was with you. I thought it was just done in the style of the Wyatt family.
And I completely, I think, in my opinion, properly assumed that these were basically being given for people to take home. They're not that expensive. Like, what, $10, you know?
They didn't look that expensive. They looked like
And so somebody
decoration.
Got, yeah. So then I obviously I took one.
Yes.
And then somebody got upset at me.
Very upset.
In press row.
Because they didn't take one too.
But this person that got upset at me pocketed one himself earlier in the day. And then I guess at some point just felt guilty about it and returned it. Meanwhile, I didn't feel guilty.
No.
And I kept it mine. It's not a very good lamp. I'd never use it.
No.
Like, it's just a shitty color.
So they're not missing it.
They're not missing it.
But you stole.
I didn't steal.
You stole it.
I didn't steal at all. No, not at all. This was... I'm 100%. I'm almost positive that they were assuming they were going to take...
You did worse than shoplifting. You committed the act of stadium lifting.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'll return it next year.
Yeah, bring it to...
I'll bring it back. San Francisco.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, sorry. I left this in my bag.
Yes.
You can return your WrestleMania 30 hoodie. That's too large.
Yeah, and we can... Well, maybe they'll have some Roman Reigns cocked fist that he can that lights up.
What?
Did you see his interview at the Survivor Series?
No, I missed that.
The most awkward line I've ever heard this man state. He said, "I wish I could be there in St. Louis, and if I was, I would cock this fist and make it rain in this bitch."
Oh,
it was
God.
The most painfully scripted line of making this dude sound like a badass, and in delivering it, sounded like the complete opposite.
Oh, that sounds
they're really fucking around with this guy with these interviews, and yeah. They're wretchedly bad.
Yeah, I don't know why they continue to do them. I feel like
the first one was a swing and a miss.
Yeah,
and they've all been since then. And I think this past Sunday just followed that pattern. These. Suck.
For somebody that they seem to have really strapped the rocket to, you figure they'd be a lot more careful about the way people perceive him. And they should know by now, after how many outings of this, that this is his weakest point. And there are so many other ways to keep him in people's memories, aside from doing these
rehab videos. Guys training like a monster for this comeback.
Or at the very least, you know, like an edited interview set to some music like they're doing for Brock Lesnar. You know what I mean?
Lots you could do. Speaking, not high up on the list. But it's a skill set he very much needs and does not have right now. He's going to acting school right now in California.
Good, he should be. He should do some stand-up, some improv.
Maybe. He tried some on... Well, actually, there was no improv to that particular interview.
That's a show I would pay to see on the network. Like all the WWE guys doing improv, sketch comedy.
Oh, sure.
Like, I mean, whatever. Who? Dolph Ziggler? Like all the guys that do it, you know?
I would watch it.
I totally watch it. Like a stand-up comedy set.
Do you know who's going to be joining us later on in the program today?
Conan.
We're going to be joined from 2006 Conan, who was on The Law the night of TNA Genesis live.
Wow.
So he's going to chat with us just moments after this this U.S. versus Mexico battle.
Mm-hmm.
This very politically charged feud.
Yeah.
With America's Most Wanted and the Latin American Exchange.
Wow, what a grab. What a grab for this show.
We booked him 8 years ago for today.
Nice.
You know what was last week's review was the Survivor Series, which took place on November the 19th.
Okay.
And we dropped that podcast on November the 19th. And we fast forward, and guess what date TNA Genesis took place on?
Let me guess. November the 26th.
Correct.
Wow. What a coincidence.
November 19th, Way. What an amazing, amazing pick.
Damn. How incredible, man. I think we should buy lottery tickets.
I quickly found out that, you know, a lot of people, they will ask us, why do you always review... You know, WWE, WCW. And the fact is, we picked Genesis here because I thought it'd be an interesting show to go back and watch. But these events are really, really hard to find.
Yeah, yeah. Who said that to you? You actually get a lot of people saying that?
I'm making that stuff up.
Oh, okay.
To emphasize my larger point.
Gotcha. Because I feel like most people would rather us only review WCW and WWF. Like, I think a lot of people would rather us review things that they've seen. You know, so they know what they're talking about. I know a lot of people have probably seen this show, but I don't think they necessarily...
I don't know if a lot of people have seen this show. It's a very old
maybe.
Event.
Yeah, you might
I mean,
be
this
right.
is a long time ago when
but,
you think about it.
Or at least the main event.
Maybe.
People, I think a large portion of people have seen. But they are kind of hard to find, unfortunately, right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I think TNA could do a much better job of making these available. Like, if it, for instance, here.
Okay, but how much demand is there?
Well, I'm saying that just to put your library up, if this was available legally for $1.99.
They used to be on YouTube.
So why not now?
I
would have paid $2 to watch this rather than find it through alternate means.
Right.
I honestly would have. You would not have, but I would have.
We want to thank our alternate means for hunting these down.
He's the hunter.
Yeah. That's right.
Never. Never any prey he cannot catch in the wrestling universe.
Yes. Anyway, but again, I would assume that it just probably there wasn't as much demand for, you know, the odd TNA show.
Probably not.
Outside of Genesis 2006, I mean, how often do you say, hey, I'm going to pop in as the cage, steel cage one. What the hell is that
Lockdown?
Called? Lockdown. Lockdown 2004.
There was no lockdown in 2004. Okay, way, come on.
I'm failing with these examples here, but you get my point.
Well, this is our annual TNA review on Review Away. We average about one of these pay-per-views a year.
But with that said, though, let's say the network, WWE Network, eventually buys TNA. Do you think there's any interest at that point? Like, could they advertise, coming this month, TNA?
I don't think Impact. There would be interest. Apparently, some of the least watched stuff on the network is old footage, old events.
Like, we're talking like ECW even?
Just
WCW?
They've just said like old pay-per-view events.
Old as in like?
Like archive footage.
Like world class.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Right.
But even, I think it goes back even to like old WWE pay-per-views.
Oh, okay,
I think
okay.
People want new content, they wow. want live stuff, they want things that are topical. And
yeah.
It's a small a subset of people that are buying the network to go back and watch whatever it is.
Sure.
WCW Super Brawl 2.
I think the idea is great. You know, obviously, like, following the Netflix model, to have a large library of content to be able to kind of promote, it gives your product value. But it's wrestling events aren't so much like movies. I mean, sports, for that matter, aren't like movies where you ever really get much of a craving to sit through the whole thing. You know, you might want to watch one match here or there, but it's not like a movie where, you know, oh, this movie will kind of like last forever, this really good movie.
Yeah, it's not the kind of, I mean, you got to be a pretty hardcore fan to say, I'm going home tonight to sit back and watch In Your House Breakdown.
Sure, or a listener,
you know what I mean?
Or a listener of the show.
I think these kinds of shows do as much to promote that old stuff as possible. Like, if sure. If I'm a fan of a podcast that reviews stuff, yeah, I'm going to try and go back and watch something. It gives me an right. incentive to watch it other than just sitting back and watching this. I think it's, I don't know how appealing it is to go back and watch an old pay-per-view unless there's that incentive to. Like, just out of the blue, watching maybe a match you want to go back and watch.
And the problem is, you know, with a lot of these events, you don't know what the matches are on it. Like, what is on In Your House, whatever you just said.
That had the famous triple threat with
what?
The Undertaker, Kane, and Steve Austin.
Oh, yes. Of course.
That show was in Hamilton.
Right. Wow. But, I mean, no one has in history has ever said, oh, I'm going to go back to watch that show. But if you told me, oh, that's the famous Hamilton, Steve Austin, Kane, Undertaker triple threat, I'll be like,
wow, I'm still not watching it.
No, I won't. But if you were there, you would.
I nearly went to that show.
Okay.
Well, parents wouldn't let me go.
Now you can watch it.
Well, you watched this show back in 2006, as I recall. This was during your call screening phase.
I guess.
Man, I remember your life way better than you do.
Yeah, dude, I don't remember seeing this at all.
It was November the 19th of 2006 at the Impact Zone. We had quite the opening video featuring Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. It being described as one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And then into this weird classical music that seemed remixed. And then they proclaim that this is the future. And to emphasize the future, they cut to the face of Sting. And then they contrast.
They're not wrong.
You're right. Maybe it was some foreboding for this 2014 review and this week's news. They contrasted the U.S. flag being put on the moon to Conan running down the American flag in a promo. And then we went into this trance music, and we open up the pay-per-view. Some of these TNA opening videos, you really felt that some illicit drug use went into these.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. Was this a David Sahadi joint?
I think this was a David Sahadi joint, or at least there was a joint from whoever was contributing to the creative direction of these videos.
I've never seen much TNA prior to their appearance on Spike, and probably when he joined. So I don't know what their production was like beforehand, but I'm sure this was a big step up from, you know, probably whatever they had. You know, I thought it was professionally well done. I thought it was nice.
This was just over a year into their time on Spike TV, and this past Thursday, going into Genesis, was their first primetime edition of Impact. So they were rapidly going up the Spike TV food chain. It would eventually become a two-hour show a year later, and things would eventually decrease. But at this point, certainly there was a lot of buzz with TNA, with Kurt Angle coming into the company. This being his first pay-per-view match, they did have him wrestle on television coming into this show. But I'm always contrasted with this time period, because it was within a week that they brought in Kurt Angle, but they also brought back Vince Russo to head up creative in the fall of 2006. And I think those two moments were kind of the best and worst decisions of 2006, and those would kind of bear themselves out. We have Mike Tenay and Don West calling the show, and calls tonight's main event the most anticipated match in TNA history, which I don't think was an overstatement.
To this day, I mean, I'm trying to think about what else, you know, what's been a higher caliber main event or feud than Joe versus Angle in TNA?
That feud was the high water mark, I think, for TNA. They would do that tremendous pay-per-view number in 2008, but this first match, I mean, it's very hard to do those dream matches in pro wrestling that truly mean something. And, you know, Joe and Kobashi had that feeling a year before this, but for TNA, this was it. This felt like such a monumental match for them.
Yeah, two guys who had never been in the same promotion, obviously, and there's just something about Samoa Joe during this time period that was... During this time period, yes, that was just incredible. And he was almost like the champion that you could tour, well, even though he wasn't champion at this time, but he was just the guy you could tour to the different territories and have him face, you know, top guys from elsewhere. And you had that with Kobashi. You had that with even the Necro Butcher match. And you have that here with Kurt Angle. And it just seemed like Joe himself had a lot of dream match pairings available to him.
The show started off with Maverick Matt. Better or worse than Rad Radford? Maverick Matt.
You know, I'll say I'd rather look like Rad Radford than Maverick Matt. This was Matt Bentley, Michael Shane, dressed in drag as part of like...
this like glam rock gothic group that they would reveal would be led by Raven.
Serotonin. Yeah.
I had forgotten the name. The Maverick Matt, Kaz, and Johnny Devine, our former colleague here at the Fight Network, Johnny Devine, who would go through a metamorphosis after this and turn into Havoc, the first TNA Havoc.
As part of this group?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And they were taking on, to this day, maybe the stupidest tag team name. That's not true. We did have the Dicks in the WWE. The Voodoo Kin Mafia. For short, VKM, whose entire gimmick was taking shots at Triple H and Shawn Michaels on television.
At what point did they become the VKM?
It was right before this, I believe.
Okay.
This was relatively new.
Was this a Vince Russo?
Of course this was a Vince Russo idea. This screamed Vince Russo idea. So we have a 3-on-2 match. Matt, Kaz, and Johnny Devine, they have the like eyeliner. They're carrying these white poles to the ring. And Don West accurately sums it up that we have more questions than answers about these guys. VKM comes down. They declared their war on Vince McMahon. There is a mystery redeemer behind the heel unit of Kaz, Devine, and Matt. Early on, they got the heat on BG, who tagged in Kip James, who just towered over these heels. His big spot was hitting a pedigree to to Matt Bentley, then calls for the sweet chin music, but instead tosses Matt to the floor. Kazarian then gets back body dropped to the floor, and Kip hits his finish to Johnny Devine and pins him in 3.5 minutes. BG then gets on the mic, mentions Vince McMahon, Michael Hickenbottom, and Paul Levesque, and says now the ground war begins, and teases something big is going to happen this Thursday on Impact.
Hmm.
Not our pay-per-view. And Don West says, this is like watching a car accident. You just can't wait to see what happens next. So we had a whole tag team act where their entire gimmick was taking shots at the WWE. And we were well on our way to the TNA of 2006 through 2011.
Yeah.
The destructive years, as I will call them.
But, I mean, how times have changed for these two. Now they're both employed by
Paul Levesque,
the people that they were mocking here.
That's how wrestling works.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I was surprised at the amount of cheers there were for the VKM. They were actual crowd chants for VKM, VKM, which reminds me of how supportive this Impact Zone crowd was. Supportive because I cannot see any other audience on this planet ever chanting VKM. In reference to
think about that,
the Voodoo Kin Mafia.
We have gotten our fans to chant VKM at our shows. Brilliant.
That's great. I mean, you know what? Compared to some of the other crowds that TNA has had, not including some of the great ones, there have been really great ones. But so the thing about the Impact Zone crowd is I've always found them a little too like disingenuous, like they're hired is how it felt. But I don't know. Maybe they had Borash just do a really good job in between to rile them up.
Really got to get this Vince McMahon angle over.
Yeah, I don't know. But you can always tell the Impact Zone crowd apart from others.
Tanay and West then run through the rest of the card, but then Kaz and Bentley bring Johnny Devine back to the ring with his head covered, and Raven comes out and reveals himself as the Redeemer. Tanay just says, it just gets stranger by the minute, and starts attacking Devine with these kendo stick shots, and Tanay emphasizes it's a purple kendo stick. That's serious business. Purple kendo stick.
You with my purple stick.
This was stupid. These giant welts are forming on the back of Devine. It just looked like this was so dumb.
I mean, it was done to...
They sliced open his back here.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was all designed to turn Johnny Devine into havoc and embrace this darker side of him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this whole angle obviously was never that successful. And I think for me, it just never really worked because I don't see any of these guys as that type of gothic character. Like, I don't see, you know, Johnny Devine, Kaz, or even this Michael, you know, Matt Bentley as like a...
Why wasn't the Voodoo Kin Mafia going after the closest Hickenbottom they've got on the roster, the cousin?
Oh, yeah, I guess. They never mentioned that. You're right.
Yeah, they...
But, you know, this is just...
Maybe they were confused because he was Maverick Matt. They didn't realize his name.
Yes. But ultimately, it just kind of became, another version of the Flock that I think even in 2006 was sort of a tired thing.
Borash is with Shane Douglas and the Naturals in the back, and they talk about Team 3D is off in Japan, where fans don't know any better. And under the guidance of Shane Douglas, the Naturals are the best team in TNA. They show a table that they put 3D through tonight, and this promo was to build up the big match, not involving Team 3D, but rather the Naturals taking on the substitutes, Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt, who were mentored by Jerry Lynn.
No. Isn't this the third week in a row we've seen Shane Douglas on a review?
Oh, boy, you're right. ECW, Survivor Series, and now Genesis.
It's amazing.
The three phases of Shane Douglas the 90s and 2000s.
We need to do, like, another XPW show, maybe. Wasn't he in that?
Yep, he was part of XPW, Extreme Reunion.
Yep.
We can go do some of those. They show footage of the Naturals putting 3D through the tables, who, as we mentioned, not on this show. And we just got a lot of kind of Lethal and Dutt showcasing a lot of their different offense here. lethal block. They sunset flip powerbomb off the apron. There was a back body drop sending Andy Douglas onto Chase Stevens. This is very confusing as you had two Douglases here on one side with Andy and Shane both.
They're brothers, aren't they?
No. Shane Douglas and Andy Douglas.
Oh,
Chase
okay.
Stevens was the partner.
Yeah, that is confusing.
Stevens ends up kicking Lethal low in the corner, and that allows them to get the advantage. Long heat spot on Lethal, eventually making the tag into Sanjay. There's a springboard senton across the ring to take down Andy Douglas. Lethal hits the lethal injection, then into a quebrada by Dutt for a two count. Stevens then has Dutt on his shoulder, and there's a drop kick off the top by Douglas as Stevens then pins Dutt after Douglas takes Lethal off the apron to the floor. 8 minutes, 8 seconds. And then the match ends, and we got one of many just quick cuts to end the segment.
The finish was a little messed up, and you know the crowd pointed it out and started chanting, "You fucked up." But basically, the guy was aiming to drop kick the opponent, and instead he drop kicked his own partner.
Oops.
Yeah. But, you know, aside from that, I thought it was a good match. A really good X Division style match that, you know, was obviously a trademark of this company at the time.
Borash is in the back with LAX, and the angle going on at the time was LAX was determined to burn the United States flag, and Petey Williams, the Canadian, stopped them from burning the American flag on Impact. Conan, who was doing some of the best promo work of his career at this time with LAX, just a lot of just hard-hitting topics and going after the baby faces. I mean, this LAX group in 2006 was just a great three-man team.
Yeah.
If you want to be part of a country where no longer does the government serve its people, but it serves big business and the military, because we've seen that here, war is profit, you go ahead, it doesn't matter. In America, keep sending your emails, long-distance phone calls, telegrams, whatever it is that you're doing, it doesn't matter. Because if you try to stop us, remember, we're American citizens, you're infringing on our constitutional rights. So tonight, we will burn the flag, and there's nothing any gringo can do about it. AMW, they say that revenge is a dish best served cold. LAX, we're cold blooded, 5150. If you think what we did to AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, and Gail Kim's was something, haha, you haven't seen anything yet. Watch as the ambassadors of violence, LAX, turn up the level of violence.
Rumor has it backstage, Jim Cornette is here to represent TNA management. We're hearing huge ramifications after what you tried to pull
through. Screw Jim Cornette! He can't tell us what to do. That gringo asqueroso, ese puto, he can't tell us anything. We don't take no orders from the white boy. Órale, arriba la raza!
Conan brings up the U.S. sending troops to Iraq under false pretenses, and tonight they're going to burn the flag and turn up the level of violence. He says, screw Jim Cornette, who is the authority figure at this point, and they don't take orders from a white boy. Conan just going after the white boy here, Jim Cornette, and then goes over.
The white boy, Jim Cornette.
That's what he called him, the white boy.
I don't know if Jim Cornette's ever been, like, you know, prefaced like that. The white boy, Jim Cornette.
Conan uses the First Amendment as his defense for making all of these statements. And then we previewed an X Division title match. Then Borash is with Christopher Daniels, who is the X Division champion at this point, asks about beating his friend AJ Styles 3 days ago for the title, and said his first priority is not friendship, but victory. Styles has his own issues tonight, runs down Chris Sabin's new attitude, and says he and Styles built this division, they earned everything they have, including this title, and tonight he's going after Sabin's respect, and that young man is gospel.
Yeah, this is Christopher Daniels, you know, still as a babyface, kind of playing the, still under the name of the Fallen Angel, but I never really got a sense of, like, any gimmick, really, you know, during his TNA run. Like, it was just more straightforward babyface who, you know, but he'd come out with that hood and stuff. But, you know, I found him way more bland at this point than how we know him today, really, you know, like, he didn't really have any sense of a humor here, whereas now I think he's one of the most entertaining guys that they had on TNA.
Just kind of the straightforward, great wrestler. I always thought he was a very good promo.
Oh, yeah, that was never...
But didn't have that range of personality that we would see him evolve with. Daniels and Sabin for the X Division title.
I guess for the X Division, they would do this camera angle with SoCal Val where they, she'd just stand on the entrance and they'd like shoot through her legs.
Yeah, and they would do that with Christy Hemme too, right? Or in the ring with the jib.
They love those shots. I guess just reminding kind of cool. people that
you could look through these legs.
They do connect with the floor and take a peek.
Sure.
West says how Christopher Daniels has held every title in TNA, and before it's all said and done, he will be the TNA champion. Incorrect, Don West. The match begins. There's a double sledge off the apron that sends Daniels into a chair and then the guardrail, as Saban has the advantage. Don West compares Chris Saban to Kobe Bryant, who was the darling of the NBA, and then developed an attitude, and now he's hard to stomach. Mm. And they were doing this really forceful, like... this brat, Chris Saban, this young brat who has no respect for the older generation. I always just felt this, it was too forced at this time, where a lot of the X Division, there wasn't that force to get these characters across. And I think that part of this change that they went through in 2006 was the idea, and I don't even know if this was accurate, that they came in with, and it's like, oh, it's a bunch of guys who do spots and they have no characters, and we're going to force these characters to come out of these guys. And they just overdid it so much. And that, to me, was the story of TNA throughout 2007, 2008, where they took these wrestlers and gave them just these gimmicks that were so hard to process.
They took the wrestlers and tried to put some sports entertainment into them.
Yeah, like all of them, it felt like. AJ may be the worst of it, who went through some horrible stuff.
Yeah, but
Joe... you know, Daniel, Saban,
what do you think, these guys. What do you think would have... Yeah, oh my God. Like Joe's girlfriend and then the kidnapping and all that.
And absolutely. That wasn't even that far out. That would be part of like the second or third Joe Angle match was the girlfriend that Angle put in a hospital. Like, that's where we were 2 months after tonight's main event.
I know.
Girlfriend attack angles.
Yeah, no, it's very silly. I definitely do think there's something to be said about, you know, being able to showcase a wrestler's personality beyond just being good in the ring. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot you should be doing there, but...
I agree.
None of this, like, kind of silly, you know, hard-to-believe stuff.
Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt, a lover or leave her on a pole match. That was some classic shit that we got in the years to come. Match continues. Saban's in control. Saban, I mean, just a really, I feel, overlooked talent throughout this time. When this guy first started in TNA, I watched this guy and was like, man, this could be their guy for the next 10 years. I was such a big fan when I first started watching a lot of Chris Saban. And you watch this match and you see why. I think it was so hard to position this guy as a heel when he worked like this. I mean, how could you not...
Yeah.
Enjoy this guy in the ring, both of these guys.
Yeah.
And Daniels lifts up from the Tree of Woe position as Saban goes to the floor, and Daniels hits this flying cross body to the floor, then comes back. The BME is stopped. There's a springboard DDT by Saban for a two count, sit-out powerbomb for another two count. Then Saban goes to the cradle shock. It's countered with a crucifix for a two count by Daniels. Saban goes for a DDT, but Daniels grapevines the leg and rolls up Saban out of nowhere, getting the pinfall at 13:24. So the idea was Daniels just outsmarted him with this great counter to the DDT. And afterwards, Saban goes to attack him with a chair, but Jerry Lynn runs in and he starts yelling at Chris Saban and demands that Saban shake hands with Daniels. Saban reluctantly does, but then hits the cradle shock to Daniels and leaves. Don West calls this disgusting.
Yeah.
But a great match, I thought.
I thought an excellent match. I just don't know if you can get away with hitting the cradle shock in a
street fight
sudden moment like that.
Yes. Hey, psych. You never know.
Cradle shock. Yeah, I don't know how often that happens. But, you know, very impressive match. Very fast, but technical match. Both guys, I think, are just so good, you know. Like, while I was watching this, the other day I was trying to, like, untangle a video cable. Like an RCA cable. Like for my, like a DVD player.
Yes.
And it was just, like, tangled. And I couldn't figure out where the end was. I must have spent, like, 5 minutes trying to untangle this. And here I am. I can't even do that. And these guys are having these incredible wrestling matches with these incredibly technical sequences. You know, they're like tying them, their limbs up into like these incredible combinations. And I can't even entangle a DVD cable.
You're a failure.
Yeah, I lose.
Just need to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got a Paparazzi Productions segment. These were done with Kevin Nash, who proclaimed himself the savior of the X Division, and he had taken Austin Starr and Alex Shelley under his wing. And they would do these segments, and for the most part, it was always described that these were largely...
improvised.
Exactly, yeah. To your WWE Network point.
They definitely felt like it, yeah.
Completely. And some people really love these segments.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at the time, I wasn't the biggest fan of these. I thought they were very goofy at the time. But you watch this and...
they're funny.
I do give them credit that they had the ability to just let these guys go.
They're definitely funny. Like, and you know, it's got that Kevin Nash type of humor where, first of all, he's amusing himself. But secondly, I'm sure, you know, it's very inside. Like,
very inside.
I'm sure a lot of wrestlers get a kick out of this. And, you know, much of the audience would too. But I think I had a problem kind of back then with it too, because it ultimately positioned the wrestlers as being kind of comedy characters underneath Kevin Nash.
Yes.
Not just comedy characters, but like in this case, Alex Shelley and Austin Aries as like, you know, these two like little siblings to Kevin Nash who, you know, like the whole savior of the X Division thing is obviously, you know, very tongue in cheek, but I don't think it really did anything for somebody like Austin Aries who would go on to become a top star in the company. He certainly wouldn't have achieved that under a role like this.
See, there's sometimes where people will say, that's just a great gimmick because it'll get over, especially comedy-style gimmicks. And I think it's always dependent on the performer. Damian Mizdow right now, that's a great gimmick for Damian Sandow. He doesn't, in my mind, have the ability to ever be a guy that I'm going to be doing anything on top with, where I'm going to need him.
Not with this gimmick.
Not with this gimmick, yeah. And even without the gimmick, I don't know what the ceiling is for Damian Sandow.
We don't know that.
Well, if you do believe that, then I don't know if this gimmick is the best idea for him at this point.
Okay.
But I think he's great in this role. With these guys, I just felt it didn't really do a whole ton for them, and people get entertained by stuff, and I just didn't, like Austin Aries, was this positive for this guy at this point in time?
Well, he didn't. Why did he leave TNA at that point?
Yeah, he had some disagreements with the company, then would return years later. And he was a guy that had top-end potential.
Oh, yeah.
I think in the company. And that's where I'm always hesitant with certain comedy gimmicks where they can be extremely entertaining, but over the long term, they can also really prohibit your growth because you're put in that box for so long, and there's a certain point where you can't get out of that box.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think about like Eric Young as an example, too, as a guy who somehow was able to kind of break out of it, but not without a lot of resistance, you know. And, like, you know, this was fine. This was okay. It was good. It was funny, even. But I just think... I thought it was sort of a waste of certain, you know, a guy like an Austin Aries in this position.
Nash says that they can have careers like other people he has been linked to, and this leads to them all just dropping varying degrees of innocuous names from Reno Riggins, George South, Hector Garza, Don Kronodal, George Scott, and Porkchop Cash.
Mm-hmm.
And Nash is also wearing a sling, which he would go on to explain, because he would provide commentary for the next match. Austin Starr and Alex Shelley against Ron Killings and Lance Hoyt. And Nash explains that he was defending his X Division title at the Budokan, and he performed a 375 black Huracan twist, injuring his arm, but he finished the match and retained the title.
Cool.
What a savior.
He's funny.
Hilarious guy.
Hey, did you,
his gimmick was trolling like the diehard wrestling
the
fans.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
His gimmick at
oh,
the
yeah,
time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which I would say there was a
good percentage of that were buying your product at this time.
You know, I actually think that's a good gimmick. I mean, for a certain audience, okay, maybe not. I think if you pepper some of that stuff in there, especially for a guy like Kevin Nash, who I would say, you know, internet opinion is not very high on Kevin Nash. So I think it's almost a really good gimmick for him, but he did it in such a joking way that it was not really heat-seeking at all. It was just more like, oh, okay, yeah, he said a joke in his low monotone voice.
I think it all depends on how you watched it. If you watch these stuff, like, Nash was in on the joke so heavily. There was one segment
He was making fun of it. He was making fun of
it. It was
so
tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
I remember once where he had this graph about the drawing cards in the WWF, and he talks about, like, you know, here were Brett and Shawn. Then there's a giant spike for him, and then it tapers off for, like, Austin and Rock.
Yeah, for business.
I mean, it was so over the top and amusing if you were. But again, super inside as well.
Super inside and you know, very entertaining, but I don't know how much of a difference it really made. No, but maybe it wasn't meant to make any difference. Maybe at this point Kevin Nash was just simply there for some comic relief. R-Truth has been using the same song for over 10 years.
I know.
You wrote the song like 10 years ago.
He's going after Jericho's record, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, I was surprised when the WWE brought this song over, you know?
Well, I guess it's R-Truth's own song, so he probably owns the...
Did they like this song that much? Yeah. Did they see this guy on TNA and they were like, wow, what an incredible song. We got to get this guy so that he can use this song on
Vince probably got a cassette tape of it and just, like, turned it on.
The idea that this song has been, you know, the main ingredient in this man's success over the past 10 years is astounding to me, because it's such a terrible song.
What's up? It's a question that can start so many conversations. Nash says he's holding a mandatory meeting this Thursday on Impact for all X Division wrestlers. Shelley does the Rick Rude hip pose to Killings, as Tanay notes, showcasing some personality. Star and Killings then have a dance-off, and then Star cheap shots him. Lance Hoyt here, wrestling with ripped jeans, black gloves, Nike shoes, and the tramp stamp.
Yeah.
What kind of tattoo is that on your low back? What is that?
What the hell?
Which Kevin Nash calls him on commentary, asking, what the hell is that?
I've never noticed this before.
Lance Hoyt and Gray Maynard. With tramp stamps.
I assume he still has this.
It doesn't disappear after.
Well, you can laser it, but...
I don't
Yeah, this man's like, got, like, a lower back tattoo of, like, what was it? Like, a skull with wings or something? I don't know.
It was called the bad idea.
Yeah, not a good look.
It's funny. You look at these four and where they all are at this point, and I would say Lance Hoyt maybe in the best spot of all these four right now in New Japan.
What's Alex Shelley up to?
He's in New Japan as well.
Okay. But Hoyt's doing better.
Alex Shelley just became the Smash champion this past Sunday.
Oh, congratulations. I'll say R-Truth's doing pretty well, though.
I would say all four are actually.
Yeah, they're all
relatively
active.
Good. All better than they were in 2006.
Absolutely.
All four. So the match continues. Hoyt, tramp stamp and all, gets crotched on the top after knocking Shelley off the apron and then retaliates. Shelley hits what is described by Nash as the Amish churn as Shelley stands on Hoyt's balls on the turnbuckle. The Amish churn.
Mm-hmm.
The heels then attack the left knee of Hoyt. They work him over, eventually makes the tag to Killings, comes in, turns a vertical suplex into a jawbreaker on Shelley. Star makes the save there. Killings then hits a leg drop off the top to the groin of Shelley, and then Killings misses a sidekick into the ropes, and they go after Hoyt's knee again. Star runs under the leg of Hoyt into a suicide dive to Killings on the floor, and then Shelley hits a splash off the top to the knee of Hoyt. Star and Shelley are arguing as Star goes to get the camera on the tripod, which Shelley would always bring out to ringside, and this leads to Hoyt with the small package to pin Shelley at 11:08, and Nash gets very upset afterwards.
Yeah, I thought an okay match. I thought, you know, for a comedy act, I thought Aries and Shelley were pretty good at it.
They cut to a preview of Christian Cage and AJ Styles, including a VO that brings up the fact that Christian quit the WWE last year and then won the NWA title, lost it in the King of the Mountain match, but was not pinned. So Christian is still undefeated in TNA.
And who? How many people really care?
Well, this was a huge undefeated streak.
I guess
a man
so.
Who has already gone through his first reign as champion.
Yeah.
And they had this highlight reel for AJ Styles, and it was just unreal. Some of the highlights of just this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm definitely watching this pay-per-view on a bit of a downer note, knowing the future of TNA and where it would go, and how this guy was not there. I mean, God, there was so much that could have been done. And what would happen over the next few years with this guy? The climax being literally a climaxing of him wearing a crown, allegedly masturbating in a bathroom the next year.
That was a climax. The other climax was whether or not he actually climaxed with this woman who was not his wife.
Oh, my God. And I watched this highlight reel.
And then he was in the G1 climax.
The best. That's your belt moment of this week.
Yeah.
Better than Isaac Yankum's crown. Bore ashes with Christian backstage. He brings up being undefeated, says he takes care of things like a man, and he's upset when Borash rolls his eyes at him and goes through a victims list, and Styles is going to go onto this victims list, and then he's going after the winner of Sting and Abyss. Not the most memorable promo. But we did get a hell of a match with AJ Styles and Christian next. Christian Cage in TNA. Mm-hmm. That cage to decipher. They go back and forth early on. Styles hit this somersault dive to the floor, and then they run into the guardrail as he takes down Cage. Cage pulls out Styles' leg from underneath him on the outside of the apron, driving Styles back first into the guardrail. Cage is in control of the match. Eventually, Styles hits a Hurricane Rana off of his back and then gets leveled by a lariat by Cage. Styles catches him off the ropes into a backbreaker, then missed a splash off the top. And it was just Styles selling and selling. And whenever he'd get an opening, he would make some mistake and Christian would get back into control of the match. Styles would bring out a top rope Hurricane Rana with both men then selling on the mat. Styles begins his comeback with a huge drop kick, a jumping knee drop, and then an inverted DDT for a two count. Styles then leaps off the top, turns around into a spear. The Unprettier gets blocked. Styles' clash is blocked. And then Styles comes back with the Pele kick. Styles goes for a springboard senton, but that's turned into a powerbomb for a two count. And then Cage goes to the floor, grabs a chair. And this is when Christopher Daniels runs down, who had been teaming with AJ for the past number of months, hops onto the apron, grabs the chair, and gets into this tug of war with Christian for the chair as Styles tries to roll up Cage. But Cage is holding on to the chair as leverage, and this allows him to sit down, hook AJ's leg for the pinfall at 15:45, and it's explained that Daniels was trying to help AJ, but in doing so led to Christian getting the win, and AJ is pissed off at Daniels after the match, and even pie faces Daniels as Dutt and Lethal enter the ring to break them up. But I thought a very good match between these two.
I did too, and I thought actually a really clever finish. You know, once you kind of think about it. And, yeah, I thought it was good.
Rhino runs in and says what he just watched made him sick. He says he and Cage nearly killed themselves in a six sides of steel cage match last Thursday. This last Thursday of Impact sounded awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cage match. You got Angle's first match. What did I need this show for? He tells them to shake hands like men, but then Styles says that Rhino is acting like Dr. Phil and he'll let him know when he needs a psychiatrist and walks off without shaking hands.
Ooh.
Our second
Thanks, Dr.
shaking
Phil.
Hands fiasco of the show in the X Division.
Hmm.
Not Daniel's not doing well on these handshakes.
Mm-mm.
Borash is with AMW and Gail Kim in the back. And LAX has vowed to burn this American flag, says they were laid out with the Mexican flag, and then they witnessed Gail Kim border-tossed halfway across the country. Across the country. And then followed by James Storm being border-tossed into a wall. They witnessed Chris Harris having his wrist shattered, and says Conan doesn't just want to cross... What was I writing here? He was crossing the ultimate line. AMW says they have never turned their back on the U.S., and Gail Kim is just shaking her head here. this Canadian that is outraged by AMW and their distaste of Conan's comments. And then we got James Storm, who talks about the First Amendment protecting Conan, but says, for them, no matter what language they use, they are going to understand the letters USA tonight, and then goes through all the other examples of languages that might be spoken tonight. And Wei, how did he do on accuracy?
Well, he noted English, French, Russian, Chinese, Japanese, Quang Gong Chung Sung,
which was a specific dialect. Of course,
I don't know what
he was.
He started like doing a very, I guess now, pretty politically incorrect naming of made-up languages.
Well, if you got offended by that, you didn't have much time to react, because then he quickly moved on to the Mexicans.
Let me tell you something. When you get out there, you're going to hear three little letters. You can translate it in any language you want to, whether it be English, Spanish, Japanese, Chinese, wada-wada-bing-bang, hai-gong-hong, hai-dong-bang, it doesn't matter. Because you will hear them. U-S-A. And then you talk about, we're going to burn the American flag. That's the only thing you're good at, is swimming and drywalling. So get out of the ring and get my garage done, because it's going to be a fight tonight. You're not going to win it.
Mm-hmm. This is America.
This is America.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a fight tonight. These were the baby faces.
Oh, yeah. There were certainly baby faces around here.
So if you weren't a white American, I don't know if you were as into this promo.
Yeah, I mean, I just loved it because it's...
Did you feel American at the end of this promo? Were you ready for a fight?
Not really, but I loved it because it was... I don't think it's something you'll see that often on TV anymore. But, I mean, the whole feud was interesting because here you're basically making the disgruntled, oppressed minorities the villains and, I guess, the white boys, the
white boys.
The baby faces. And
would have been a way better name for AMW.
Yeah, the white boys.
America's most white boys.
But I think, you know, you had both sides playing extreme stereotypes, but I guess depending on the crowd and sort of the tone of the language, you could see either side as a baby face or a heel.
Imagine Conan being paired with Rusev.
Yeah.
Going against America.
I think Conan as a baby face.
No, it's a heel. Well,
yeah, they would kind of cancel each other out. But you'd sort of get the Jack Swagger thing, you know? Like, who does the crowd cheer for?
Well, is it Conan being an anti-American
spokesman?
Teaming with Rusev.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah. Lana's secret money backer.
Really? Lana's secret podcast. her secret Iraqi whatever.
As she go, we're typically hearing the Rusev crush, but for the big, the big statement, it's Rusev boom.
Oh, okay. I thought it'd be like Rusev Kush.
Rusev Kush. LAX against AMW, which as many times as I hear that acronym, I only think of hamburgers.
We shouldn't put this on YouTube. I think we'd only lower the quality of YouTube. We'd lower the bar.
Is that
possible?
Much
more. Yeah, man. Oh, we just get more hateful comments.
I'm fine with that. Okay. Most people have grown to hate me.
Well, I do love YouTube comments, too. Like, anytime I watch a video, I always scroll to the comments just to see the bile that gets spewed up there.
Conan comes out and says that they are protected by the First Amendment, and then they just start brawling around ringside. AMW, they lift Homicide and toss him over the top onto Hernandez on the floor. Hernandez just overpowers Chris Harris. Chris Harris, you watch this match, and, you know, there were times this guy was thought to be this breakout star. Not the smoothest of performers.
Who's that, Hernandez?
No, Chris Harris.
Oh.
But Hernandez, that goes for as well.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I don't know what your opinion of him was at this point. But
I was indifferent to the guy. I didn't see him as this breakout star that many did, maybe even a few years prior to this.
I found it really surprising that he got picked up, of all people, by the WWE. But I'll say, you know, he certainly had a lot more upside at this point in his career than he does now. Now he's like, He's sort of like the joke of the internet wrestling community.
Well, maybe he'll make a comeback one day.
I think he should.
Maybe he'll get in that Hall of Fame.
What was his line again?
I'm Braden Walker, and I'm going to beat your brains
out. Yes. Yes.
The crowd got into chanting for USA. Ton of heat here with Conan riling up the crowd. There, Storm Hill, a tilt-a-whirl head scissors to Hernandez, and then comes back, goes for the border toss, but Harris pulls down Storm. There was this awkward catch by Storm of Homicide in the corner, and Harris lifts him up for the death sentence, but Hernandez stops Harris. Homicide then hits a splash off the top to Storm. Harris makes the save. Harris then blocks the Gringo Killer, and then into a version of the heart attack to Homicide is delivered. The referee, he doesn't even bother trying to enforce who is the legal man here. It's just explained that anything goes, which would be fine if not for the title match we would get after this. But nonetheless, we see the death sentence hit onto Hernandez. Conan distracts the referee, and then Homicide hits James Storm with a blowtorch.
The end of a blowtorch.
Not a lit
blowtorch. Turn it on.
The blowtorch was brought out to light up the flag.
That's the next match.
And Hernandez then rolls on top for the pin at 9:28. Conan has the U.S. flag. They shove Gail Kim around. Homicide then goes for the Gringo Killer to Kim when in runs Canadian Petey Williams. At least this makes sense to save his fellow citizen, Gail.
It makes sense, but not really. They never pointed out Gail's Canadian-ness at all.
Petey was the savior of the U.S. flag, and he runs in with a pipe, and the flag is just placed on the mat.
Was she ever in Team Canada, Gail?
No, right?
Yeah, okay.
She was aligned with Jeff Jarrett's crew.
But. So what was the eventual explanation about why Petey was helping?
It would eventually... He was just helping out, and then they would pair him...
He hates seeing flags burnt.
He's just not a fan of it. Yeah. And then he would morph into Little Petey Pump.
Yeah. Right.
Yet another X Division character that... Cute.
Cute, but... Yeah, cute.
That's how I would describe what the X Division, many of these characters would become.
They're
cute
like...
Cute characters.
Yeah. They're like the Muppet Babies. Like, the Muppets are the main eventers, but then you had the cute versions of the Muppet Babies.
Then Jim Cornette comes out and proceeds to say that this here gringo white boy has something to say and says that they are guilty of egregious misconduct and bad taste. And management and fans don't like the idea of them trying to burn a flag, nor do the veterans that have defended this country or families that have lost loved ones who fought for the right of free speech. Yeah. And management has decided they are not fit to represent TNA and are stripped of the tag titles. And what did the U.S. audience and the crowd feel? They booed this decision.
They said bullshit.
They chanted bullshit, and they have until Thursday to hand over the titles. This was the peak of TNA. Just forget about your pay-per-views. Tune in on Thursday. What a stupid idea this was. I have no recollection of this, but this sounded just stupid on paper.
Right. Yeah, what is the whole, all these rule changes? Like, Cornette, whatever, enforcing law. Anyway, how weird must that have been, you know, for Cornette to be working in there with Russo? Huh?
Not good, because he tried to quit, and then was talked into staying.
Well, you know.
Remained for another 3 years there.
Yeah, I like the Hernandez and Homicide as a team.
I did too,
especially with Conan as the mouthpiece because you know they seem to have every base covered. Conan with the talking and Hernandez being paired with this big guy being paired with a high flyer. And I think Hernandez is one of those guys that always definitely shined the biggest when he was paired up against smaller guys
and hidden in a tag team.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
this was definitely the peak of Hernandez in TNA. Jim Mitchell is with Abyss in the back with this red lighting. And Abyss holding a bat, he explains how Sting looked at Abyss and sees his own hidden darkness inside. And he's going to dig into the reptilian part of your brain. I miss Jim Mitchell so much on television. Abyss is going to beat him into a state of enlightenment. And it ends with Abyss simply roaring. And then we go into a video preview for the match, which featured one of the best lines of the pay-per-view. The voiceover explaining that when describing Abyss, no one can say what traumatic life event transformed him into the maniacal killing machine he is today.
His personal pain becomes his opponent's living nightmare. The ring is his personal slaughterhouse.
Oh, wow.
Deep shit. Sting and Abyss for the NWA title. How timely this was.
Why?
With Sting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
big
sure.
Focal point of Genesis.
Yes.
When we picked this last week, I had no recollection that this match happened on this event. But boy, do I remember this match and the outrage after it.
Okay, tell me about it.
Wow. This was quite the match. Sting attacks him right away. And they're brawling all over the place. We immediately introduce these tables and barbed wire boards that are set up by the stage. And knowing that Abyss was in this match, you knew that wasn't a mistake. Abyss goes for a powerbomb on the ramp. When the referee warns him he cannot do this, Sting fights him off. They get back to the ring. Sting hits a pair of splashes in the corner, shoves Abyss off the top, and then hits a splash off the top rope, getting a two count. They continue onwards here with Mitchell handing the title to Abyss, who misses with a belt shot, and then Sting goes for a scorpion deathlock, applies it, but Abyss makes it to the rope. Sting then runs at Abyss with the title belt, but into a black hole slam, got a great near fall here, and then hit a bunch of back elbows by Sting, stopping a choke slam. Sting then accidentally elbows referee Rudy Charles, the first of many infractions. Abyss then brings out these tacks, but Sting has a bat and knocks the tacks away, attacks Abyss with the bat, and then hits an inverted DDT. Mitchell then pulls the referee away, and then Sting takes the tacks and lays them all out, but Abyss gets back to his feet, grabs Sting by the throat, and chokeslams Sting onto the thumbtacks.
Mm-hmm.
Sting taking tacks.
Yeah, I did not. I mean, I guess I've seen this match before, but I don't remember it. But I saw this and I was surprised because, you know, you expect young guys or Abyss to take the thumbtack spot, but you'd expect, you know, a guy like Sting, former franchise star of a company, to not have to do it.
Do you realize within a few months of each other, in 2006, Sting and Ric Flair on an episode of ECW, both guys took thumbtack spots in 2006. How weird is that?
What do you mean ECW?
WWE's ECW.
Oh, did they?
They had Flair work a match with Big Show on an ECW one week.
And he took thumbtacks.
And he took thumbtacks. And I thought it was the most depressing thing ever to see Ric Flair taking tacks.
Yeah, it's making the thumbtack spot kind of seem like... I mean, it looks visually very stunning still, but it almost makes me feel like anybody can do it.
Well, the crowd goes nuts for the visual of seeing Sting go through the tacks. And what does Sting do? He kicks out and just pops up to his feet.
He hulks up. He no-sells the thumbtacks.
He stings up.
Stings up, yeah.
He re-energizes himself. Then Sting drop toeholds Abyss face first onto the tacks. Great idea. One of many this man can look back on during his career.
Do you think they'll do thumbtacks at Mania this year?
They have to.
Yeah, why not?
Pedigree onto the tacks.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we joke, but they'll have to pull out some good gimmicks, I think.
You'll need a lot of shortcuts.
Yeah.
For sure. If they do that match, how long do you think it goes? Hunter and Sting. Because
match,
Sting should not be going anywhere more than 10 minutes.
I could actually see a lot of, like stare downs, like a lot of like more of a slow pace kind of, and it shouldn't be like, you should just really let the moment breathe. And so, you know, it could be a good 12
minutes. It's going to need to be one of those like Hogan Rock, like
sure,
a well laid out match,
yeah,
to hide the deficiencies that are glaring.
Yeah. But you know, I totally think Hunter is a great choice.
And you'll have an incredible crowd for it.
Yep.
Like, they're going to be nuts for Sting.
And listen, Sting is, we shouldn't make that comparison to Hogan. Sting is way more mobile than Hogan was at that point. I think
2002, Hogan wasn't where he is now, but
Sting is,
I would agree with that.
Way more mobile.
The match continues here. James Mitchell gets involved again, distracting the referee, and this time Sting puts him in the scorpion deathlock. Then Sting attacks Abyss with a chair on the floor, ties Abyss's legs up with a rope from the rafters, hanging him upside down, where I was only transfixed on this bizarre growth on the side of Abyss. Did see this?
No, I didn't. You sure it wasn't a tattoo?
No, it was a lump
growing
out of the side of Abyss, and I was just, I didn't know what this was.
Weird.
I have no idea.
I hope you got that checked out. Like a cyst?
A giant cyst.
Weird. Okay.
So he's attacking. Abyss? So Abyss is hanging from the rafters, being beaten with chair shots outside the ring. Countouts are apparently oblivious here, as I assume DQs are as well.
Mm-hmm.
They go up the ramp, and what happens? Rudy Charles is trying to stop Sting, and Sting shoves the referee away twice before he clotheslines Rudy Charles, and Abyss is sent off the stage through the barbed wire tables, and the DQ is called at 15 minutes and 17 seconds after Rudy Charles had been hit by Sting. After all this shit we've just seen, after all we just watched in the tag match.
Wait a second, wasn't this a no DQ match? Like, wasn't this like...
This was never explained as a no DQ match.
Like, wasn't this some type of, like, a weapons match?
No.
Like, were there no stipulations at all?
There was no stipulation
other
than it was a title match.
So you could just throw in the thumbtacks and the barbed wire table?
Yes. Okay. As I said, this made no sense to me on the surface, but a shove to the referee necessitated the end of this match to be called. And for those of you that have been paying attention to TNA long enough, you will remember that they had this wacky rule where a title can change hands by DQ, and therefore Abyss wins the championship. And I will guarantee you, when they announced this, 95% of the audience had no clue about this rule.
Oh, I didn't know. Yeah, but why was that rule introduced? Like, what? Why was that going to make your show better?
The idea was by introducing this rule, it would tell you that we're never going to do bullshit finishes in our title matches.
Okay.
And it would not give us an out that if we don't have a finish, we're simply going to do a DQ. It's there as a measure to tell you you're going to get clean finishes for title matches. The idea you would actually do this for a title change, asinine. Just asinine. So Abyss is now the TNA champion as he is out cold from taking this table spot, and they explain the rule, and Mitchell places the title onto Abyss's dead body, and he's your new champion. A new era.
Yeah.
And Abyss would hold this title for 2 months.
Abyss and assist.
Oh, God. I'm going to get a screen grab of this growth and show it to you. No, in fact, I've got it.
Let me see it. You actually took it?
Well, no, but I got the video.
Okay, so I got to see this.
Okay, like the fact you didn't notice this, like it's all I could see during this. Okay, I do have to find it, so you're going to have to give me a second.
Well, I don't know how people are going to find this. This show isn't really readily
available. I'll take a
screen
grab
post the screen grab.
Because it was alarming to me. Poor Abyss.
Yeah, we gotta see this.
Well, we know he lived. So okay, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he must have had maybe barbed wire caught it or something.
Okay.
Ooh.
Now you're watching this.
All right, ready? Oh, okay.
It's on.
Almost. Get ready to pause it. Abyss is hung up right now, upside down. His shirt's falling off of him.
Hey, we didn't mention Sting in great shape here. No.
Oh yeah. Zoom into that.
How do you zoom in on the video?
No, I see it. Take a screen cap. Print screen, yeah. It's not that big.
It's sizable.
It's like a golf ball.
Yeah, it's not softball level, but it's still something you could play golf with. And
could it just have been like a bruise? Big
bruise? Doesn't look like a bruise to me.
Well,
I think we need a better close-up shot of
it.
I'm amazed that they could pull this off of hanging this guy up like this and not landing on his head.
Oh, right on the cyst. Steel chair right on the cyst. Ouch. Okay.
Well, we've had enough of this. Okay.
See, if this was a
video... tacks in his body. Oh, my God.
If this was a video podcast, people would be able to see it immediately.
We would have B-roll of the cyst.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't like the DQ finish. I thought it was a shitty way to take the title off of a guy. Really lame. It was just a bad idea. But these guys had a hell of a brawl. To their credit.
Yep, I agree.
This was an out-of-control brawl. But to do a DQ finish when you have done all of this shit, after we just saw a tag match where the referee didn't care at all what was happening. We saw blowtorch worked into a finish. To just pull a DQ for a shove to the referee, it just... bad structuring when you know what your finish is and what you were going to be building.
Well,
to.
The rules didn't state barbed wire tables weren't allowed. They didn't say thumbtacks weren't allowed, but attacking the ref, I guess.
And then it's time for our main event. They showed the Kurt Angle video, the infamous headbutt angle on Impact, busting up Joe. There was a pull-apart brawl, some very good promos from both guys back and forth with Joe in a gym training. Everything you wanted to build this match up as a fight.
I remember, you know, this match being announced like almost immediately after Angle had debuted. And personally, I thought it was like, it felt a little too soon,
mm-hmm.
Because it seemed like something you would have saved up for, like a WrestleMania-level type of match. But instead, they just went ahead and did it pretty much a month in.
Because Kurt's first match was going to be big regardless, because it would be a new opponent, and it was Kurt wrestling in TNA. And they did it on Impact against Abyss, and you were doing that primetime special. But, yeah, this was like your dream match and Kurt's first big pay-per-view match. All in one together. But that said, it was a big deal at the time, which you can't say about too many TNA matches in history. This was the 17-month unbeaten streak of Joe going up against Kurt Angle. Angle's forehead all bandaged up from the match with Abyss. There was a sign in the crowd that read, "Squish him, Joe. Squish him." And very big buzz as the match began. The crowd was so into all of this from start to finish. Match begins. There was the first big spot was Kurt Angle hitting a belly-to-belly suplex and then clotheslines Joe to the floor. And what does Kurt then do? He shoves referee Earl Hebner.
Whoa.
I couldn't believe it. But in a lot of ways...
There goes the unbeaten streak.
DQ gone. Finish.
From a shove.
The streak... Well, Kurt would have lost. By DQ, the streak continues and Kurt is 0-1 in TNA. I guess... past that second match, Joe grabs him, sends him into the barricade on the floor. Angle then runs into the post shoulder first, and Joe hits an elbow suicida and then runs Angle into the steps. And as Joe gets back into the ring, Samoa Joe shoves Earl Hebner and threatens to backhand him. I thought that they were just trying to taunt me.
Well, I guess Earl's a lot more forgiving. It's up to the
when you're doing that last finish, you would think they would. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Way there were back and forth chants for both. Angle, his cut is all wide open. He was bloody.
He's gushing here.
Just gushing blood. Joe places him on the top, but Angle stops the muscle buster with a guillotine and then hits a DDT. Joe then misses him in the corner. Angle hits two Germans, barely hits this third one as he loses him upon lifting him. And Tenay explains that the loss of blood is affecting Kurt. Angle then goes for an angle slam. It's countered with an arm drag. Joe follows with a running boot, hits the muscle buster. Angle kicks out of the muscle buster. Then Joe goes for the coquina clutch. It's countered. Angle slam is hit for a two count. Place is going nuts here. Kurt pulls down the straps, applies the ankle lock. Then Kurt turns to his back, and Joe gets the coquina clutch. Angle counters out of that, grabs the ankle again, reapplying it. Joe reverses out. And then Joe runs into the corner and misses him. Angle slam is hit, and Kurt reapplies the ankle lock, and this time he gets the tap. 13 minutes and 32 seconds. Crowd was insane for this whole match.
Absolutely, yeah. And this was where, you know, a point where I found myself actually agreeing with much of the crowd's reaction. I thought, I mean, the match was really good, you know? Like, with a lot of the Samoa Joe matches at this point, these matches were always kind of very hard-hitting and pretty quick-paced. I would say, you know, this didn't really feel as satisfying as, you know, some of the other Samoa Joe matches or even some of the other matches that he would have with Kurt Angle, simply because of the length, I felt. And, you know, there was a lot of good... stuff in here, but it just like didn't seem to tell as full of a story as you might have expected for a dream match. You know, but still, the great color on Angle, crowd was very intense, and it was a good match.
Joe gets on the mic, he calls for Kurt. The crowd is already turning on their homegrown star, chanting, "You tapped out." He says, "Yeah, I did tap out because I can recognize when someone else is the better man." He wants a rematch, and he offers his hand to Kurt, but Kurt walks off. Yet another handshake gone wrong at Genesis, And Joe then says, I guess we have to do this the hard way. No, I guess we have to do this the shitty way. And thus was the future of TNA afterwards. This might have been the highest point in TNA history. This might have been it.
Would you actually say so? If you had to pick 1 second of TNA's life up until this point, TNA still exists, obviously, but up until this point, what was the best second of TNA?
Maybe Kurt Angle's the announcement he was coming.
Right, right.
That was a pretty big moment. I mean, going on Monday nights was a great night, but a horrible fallout when they had to move back. But this would be, if I had to pick one match, it would either be this or the Joe Angle match after that build to the lockdown match in 2008.
Right.
But this was a very much anticipated match. But coming out of it, what did you think of the ending of the streak, the way they did it? I think the wrong guy won this match. I would have had Joe established as our top guy, and they have an amazing match, but the TNA guy wins, and you establish Joe as the top guy.
Yeah, I don't know really what their plan was. Obviously, the plan was to do multiple matches with these two, and I thought...
Which I think was a mistake, too, to do so many right away. They did 3 straight papers.
Perhaps right away, yeah. But, you know, I think I felt almost felt like the match was booked to just almost kind of give you a glimpse and almost just a preview rather than the full thing, you know, to kind of leave you a bit more hungry. You definitely can make the argument that, you know, what does Kurt Angle really benefit from defeating Samoa Joe? People already see Kurt Angle up at that level, right? You could have given that to somebody else, you know, because it was a big deal. It was a big deal, unlike the, I guess, the Christian undefeated streak.
He was the new streak?
I thought the Joe streak was actually one that was, like, you know, somewhat substantial.
He hadn't had a title reign in there where he's still undefeated afterwards?
Yeah. So, I thought the match came too early, you know. I would have liked to have seen Kurt Angle kind of establish more of a presence there. But then you can argue against that, too. Maybe, you know, he would have cooled down. I mean, certainly the moment he was announced, the match everybody thought about was him versus Samoa Joe. And you could argue that maybe, you know, the anticipation was not going to get higher than it was at this point.
Yeah, I was fine with the decision to go with it at this point. This was a rare TNA pay-per-view that did very well by TNA standards, well above what they were averaging month to month. And it's a well-remembered TNA match, which there isn't a gigantic library of. So to that end, but I think a lot of what came out of this, I mean, Joe would go through. This was maybe the high point for Joe, even when you fast forward to the future Angle matches. He had a TNA title run. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything matched that year and a half from 05 up until this loss.
Right.
I don't think they ever got close to that with him. All right, feedback time from the Law message board at lawradio.proboards.com. Danny Hernandez starts.
When do you want to go to our guest?
Oh, shoot. I'm terrible with
these. He's sitting right here waiting this whole time.
Sorry, it's time to go back to, you'll never guess what date this took place on.
November 16th, or 26th.
Actually, technically, it would have been November 20th. It would have been after midnight.
Oh, okay.
With Conan on the Law, just hours after Genesis, speaking with Dan Labransky on Live Audio Wrestling.
All right, here we go. We're going to Conan is on the line right now.
Conan, how you doing, brother?
Yo, it's cracking. I'm over here after the match at the hotel and chopping it up with you guys.
All right, brother. Now, before we talk about tonight's show, I just wanted to get the update on how you're feeling, because I know you've had some troubles with your hip. We could see on TV you're having a little bit of trouble. Just how's Conan doing health-wise at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not doing too good. I'm getting around with a cane, and so it's come to the juncture where now I got to have hip replacement operation, but you know, I'll be back hopefully in about 4 months.
So are you going to have that surgery very soon then?
Yes, very soon. Yeah, because I'm using actually like a cane to get around now. It's really bad.
Right. Now, so I guess, are we going to see you disappear from the Lax storyline for a while, or?
No, I don't think so, because I'll probably still be, you know, the mouthpiece, but, you know, I may miss a couple shows.
Right. Speaking of the mouthpiece of the group, I have to say, Conan, you've been doing a great job on the promos, really stirring it up, big time. I'm just curious where the whole LAX angle came from and how it came about.
Well, it just really came about just my own personal views on the American government, and I just turned up the volume just like you would with a character. So I took some of my real beliefs and just exaggerated a little bit and just make people think. You know, it isn't just a wrestling promo where, oh, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to retire you, or I'm better than you. You know, my whole thing is, you know, it's taking a country of millions to hold us back and a company full of racists to hold us down, but no longer, because now we're going to take things into our own hands, and we kind of have. And then I just pose questions that, you know, like today, if you saw the show today, you know, I asked Petey Williams, why would you want to be part of a country that sends its soldiers to war under false pretenses to get slaughtered in Iraq? And I'm sure a lot of people think the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also asked them, why do you want to be part of a government who does not serve its people anymore? It serves big business, financial institutions, and the military, the industrial military complex. So that makes you think, too, you know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to do something that's going to provoke thought. You know, right now, the flag thing provokes anger in a lot of people. But we're heels. That's what we're supposed to do.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. It's very, very old school in terms of a heel gimmick. That's why I think it works really, really well. Tonight on the pay-per-view with the angle with Cornette, you guys were stripped of the belts. And I'm just kind of curious where that's going to go, because I have to admit that was a bit of a surprise to me, the finish in that match.
Yeah, and the people were really mad, which was funny. You know,
I mean, you guys are supposed to be the heels, and they seem to be turning you babyface.
Yeah, yeah, but that was more the people. Believe me, they're doing everything they can to keep us heel. That's why we're doing this flag-burning thing. What was the question?
I was just curious.
Where's it going with Jim Cornette? Is that what you asked?
Right, right.
Yeah. We're kind of letting the cat out of the bag a little bit. We're going to sue him, you know, for infringing our First Amendment rights and all that. So we're basically going to sue him.
Right, right, right. So will the program continue with America's Most Wanted, or are you going to work with
Yeah, it just kind of started. So, you know, I wasn't too happy with the match today, but Homicide has a really bad fever. But, you know, you will see better matches. I think we could have had a better match, but, you know, it was all right.
Right, right. I thought the in-ring work wasn't bad. I just think a lot of people were definitely surprised with the stripping of the belts angle there at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other things I wanted to ask you, Conan, just while we have you, and because you are, you know, you've been a fixture of the Mexican wrestling scene for so long, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the passing of Antonio Pena, because that just happened a little while ago, and I know that you were a big part of AAA, and I know that the two of you, you know, had your moments in the past, and I just wanted you to maybe enlighten some of our listeners on Antonio Pena and how important he was to Mexican wrestling.
Yeah, Antonio Pena, you know, to me personally, was like a father, a mentor, a boss, you know, a friend. He was awesome. And he, you know, I was actually booking that company when I was 26, 27, 28 years old. You know, that's very young. And he let me do whatever I wanted to. He was a very, was a risk taker, was a very generous person, really revolutionized Mexican wrestling, kind of brought it. Almost kind of like what Vince did in the United States,
right.
Kind of, you know, made it more mainstream, more glitzy, made it really popular, and he broke a lot of rules that had never been seen before and came up with a lot of genuine concepts that, you know, are still in Mexican wrestling to this day. Definitely a revolutionary, you know, and like I said before, I used to book that company with him. I actually started it with him, and he really just let me create. And, you know, with good angles and bringing in guys like Rey Mysterio Jr. that he didn't even know who Rey was.
Right.
Believing in me and Psychosis and, you know, a Love Machine, you know, I brought Eddie Guerrero to AAA. So, you know.
So how do you see the future of AAA playing out now with Pena gone? Will someone take the reins, or will the company fall apart?
Yeah, the family's running it, and I'm going to start helping them with booking again, and I'm going to help them with the production and stuff like that. So we're going to be very strong.
Right. How about TNA's relationship with AAA? I mean, we saw a little bit of a swap there. Unfortunately, it didn't work out with Hector Garza and Shocker, but are we going to see some more back and forth there? Some more luchadors TNA?
Yeah, TNA's been going to Mexico almost every month, but I'm going to start bringing some wrestlers from over there. One of the main problems was the visa problem that, you know, it just costs a lot of money to bring a wrestler over here just for one match, you know, and buy a visa for him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And So, but you know, I think we're going to be able to overcome those issues because there's another American promotion in the United States that's going to be working with AAA, and they're going to be paying for their visas. So now we'll be able to bring them in, you know.
Right. Right on. I have to admit, it was great when Hector Garza was there. I was really unfortunate that he was kind of forced to leave the company because I thought he was great.
Yeah, Hector's money. He's money in Mexico right now.
Right.
He's like part of the hottest group. It's come, I don't want to say DX-ish because they're not that corny, but they're kind of NWO-ish, you
right.
know, like when they first started,
right.
called Perros del Mal. And so, you know.
All right, well, Conan, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We have to wrap things up here, unfortunately, but take care of yourself.
Where are you calling from?
We're calling from Toronto.
I just want to say one thing. I haven't been to Toronto in a long time because I need, like, a minister's permit. But Toronto's, like, one of the coolest places I've ever been to, and I had a lot of fun there. And I actually wrestled in Stampede Wrestling, like, in its
wow.
last year of existence.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you so much, Conan, for joining us, and take care of yourself with that hip, all right?
Good to hear from Conan 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and now you can see him on Lucha Underground.
Yeah, which he's fantastic in. And you can also hear him on
MLW.
Exactly.
Yes, he's a man of many mediums these days in 2014. All right, now it's time to go to the message board, and Danny Hernandez. So where to start? The undercard had some potential, but was underwhelming. The X-title match picked things up as Daniels and Sabin had a very good match. Angle and Joe totally delivered. It was a fantastic match. TNA did a great job making this match seem like a big deal. At the time, I was all aboard the TNA bandwagon, as many in the vocal minority were at the time. Hence, we would get a few TNA chants during Raw shows at the time, most noticeably during the classic fake Rosie O'Donnell, fake Donald Trump match, if you recall. Don't know, and looking back with 2020 vision, I would have had Joe tap or lose to the WWE guy coming off being fired in his first match. But hey, the payoff of Joe beating Angle at Lockdown 08 for the world title may have been worth it in the long term booking wise, I guess. 7 out of 10. I don't think they had their plans laid out for a year and a half out at this point.
Yeah, it also seems kind of odd to me to take your undefeated babyface to turn him into an underdog. That quickly, like, I don't know. Okay, we go to Matt in suburban Detroit. Wow, this show definitely does not hold up. The start of this awful downfall of 2007 for TNA. Look at how much of the company had fell from the Damore era and the Acme at Genesis 2005 when Christian Cage actually jumped ship. The good, Angle versus Joe, Sabin and Daniels and all those tag teams. The bad, Abyss's title win and Vinny Roo's fingerprints all over the show. 5, why isn't Petey Williams on this card out of 10?
Edward James from Toronto. Overall, great show looking back as a singular card in the world of TNA. The wrestling was well above average for today's standards, and some of the spots were refreshing and got me on the edge of my seat. The Daniel Sabin match was fantastic, Christian Styles was as well, and I had a lot of fun watching the tag team matches. I remember hating when Sting lost the title to Abyss, and it did feel flat watching it again. Angle Joe was excellent. The only downsides were that in hindsight, I wouldn't have Joe tapping in their first match, and the crowd was obnoxiously hot, chanting, "This is awesome, holy shit," and TNA, while nothing was happening, really gives some perspective on the role of the crowd during a main event. A great wrestling card with very questionable booking decisions. A true TNA show. That's very true. Great wrestling, which was a huge calling card for them. And this whole time that we talk about the identity of TNA, it was really shaped in the next 3 years as a company that really just tried to pattern themselves character-wise, personality-wise, off of what they believed wrestling was, which was WWE at that time, and I think lost what they had built in the years prior to this.
I agree. Randy in Australia, I was so excited when you announced this review. I yearn for the golden age of TNA, which commenced in mid-2005, and, to me, finished a few months after this when they'd completely botched the Joe Angle feud. I don't know why I have such rose-tinted glasses. Joe Angle was better than I remembered it. Removed from the context of Joe's undefeated streak, I think I was able to ignore it more than I did 8 years ago. The LAX versus AMW was the opposite. I remember this feud really fondly, but this match was kind of dull. Daniels versus Sabin and Cage versus Styles were only okay, but with my memories of 2006 TNA, I expected heaps more from both of these matches. The rest of the show was just shit. Who knew I could be bored by Alex Shelley or Austin Aries? Who knew that this pay-per-view featured the exact moment that the awesome Raven character jumped the shark as he became the Gimp Daddy. You know, it's quite possible, looking back at it, that the beginning of the end was actually this pay-per-view.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for your feedback. You can, of course, join the message board, lawradio.proboards.com. And I want to thank Conan for stopping by 8 years ago. And next week, Mr. Ting and I will be reviewing...
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you had an answer for us.
No. Did we talk about this?
No, we really didn't. I was just...
No.
Maybe you weren't listening.
No,
that's not true. We didn't talk about this.
No,
well, what do you feel like reviewing next week, Mr. Ting?
You had a great suggestion, actually. Now I remember.
Do you want to review that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, with Sting in the news so much, and, of course, trying to get off this devastating DQ loss of his NWA championship, we're going to go back to Sting and the match that really put him on the forefront as a main event star, and everyone goes back to March 27th of 1988, the first Clash of the Champions card, where him and Ric Flair headlined that show, going against WrestleMania 4 that day, and a fantastic call by Jim Ross in that night's main event. So we're going to go back and review the very first Clash of the Champions from 1988, Flair versus Sting.
My only question is Shane Douglas on this show?
That, unfortunately, is a streak that may come to an unfortunate end next week.
No, what is it? Bodacious Dudes or whatever.
The Dynamic Dudes.
Dynamic Dudes. Okay.
Oh, unfortunately not. The Samoa Joe and Shane Douglas' streak ends on this podcast. We're going to get on out of here, but we will be back next week reviewing that Clash of the Champions, which is up on the WWE Network, or find it however you must. So, for Way... I am Pollock. I don't know why I'm doing that. What do you want to end with here?
Why did you do that?
Some music for us? I understand Wu-Tang is getting together for something big.
Yeah. What are they? They've got a new album coming out.
What's a song off their new album?
You know, I don't know. I've really kind of fallen off.
Is it easy to find?
I don't even know if it's out yet.
Okay, well, we're going to go out with Wu-Tang, regardless of the era.
Okay.
Just for you.
Thanks, man.
Let's hear some RZA, some GZA.
Yeah, how many can you name? RZA, GZA, yeah.
The ZZA?
No.
No?
Try again.
The BZA.
No, man, those are all the ZAs.
We got ODB.
Yeah, three.
That's good.
That's all you got? Come on, man. You could do better than that. Think about... Everybody, every rapper you know who might be in the Wu-Tang Clan. I'm going to say you can name at least five.
I'm not going to name five.
You've already got three. You just need two more.
I would go so far as to say I've never listened to a full Wu-Tang song in my life.
Regardless. Come on. One more. Give me one more.
How about for each member I have named, you have to name...
What?
A member of Aqua.
I think I can name every member of Aqua.
Go for it.
There's definitely a Klaus.
Damn.
Is there a Sven?
Yes.
Lena was the chick's name?
How do you spell it?
L-E-N-A?
E.
Fuck. Well, I was one letter off.
What was the main guy?
The bald dude?
Yes.
Klaus, Sven, man, what is this? Some type of Kierke?
Not even close.
Whatever. It's a normal name. I named as many Wu-Tang members as you did.
What about Renee? Was there a Renee?
Renee, okay.
In Wu-Tang?
But Renee was... That's hard to guess for a man. A bald, deep-voiced man.
Now I wish there was a Wu-Tang cover of...
A mashup, you mean?
To go out. Oh, yeah. Maybe there is.
I don't think that exists.
Okay, well, I'm going to go learn about Wu-Tang this week.
Okay, great. I'll test you next week.
All right, that's all for us. We will chat with you next week.
Klaus and Sven are like the only two Danish names I could think of.
If you guess Klaus, odds are you're probably going to hit upon any trivia involving someone that's Dutch.
Definitely. No, Danish.
Danish?
Dutch is Amsterdam.
I don't know my countries.
You're thinking of food, probably.
I could go for a Danish right now.
Yeah. Anyway.
Or a Dutchie. You can eat a Dutchie.
What is that exactly?
It's some kind of pastry.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure about this.
Whatever.
Are you done with me?
Yeah. I think next week we're going to try to see how much of our show will not be wrestling related.
I think it should be an ongoing goal.
Yeah.
The smaller, the better.
Definitely.
I want it to be so little that you eventually say, why did I even watch this?
Yeah. Yeah.
We can sum it up in about three minutes.
Maybe I just won't watch the show and I'll just, like, you know, show
bullshit
up.
Your way through it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the transitions in the match, and that spot that they built to was really well done.
Yeah.
Finish left a little to be desired.
And if people disagree with me, it's all subjective, so, you know. Anyway. Goodbye.
That's it. No, bye.
Yeah.
An abyss is going to open. Dark corridors in your mind. My monster abyss is going to teach you to dig into the reptilian part of your brain. You'll question everything you believe in. He'll take you down the highway to hell, and you will go willingly. But in your defeat will come knowledge. Will come a sort of freedom. You see, you'll be thankful, and you won't thank your creator. No, you'll thank the man that you consider to be the embodiment of evil. The very man who beat you into a state of enlightenment. My Monster Abyss, the next NWA World Heavyweight Champion.
Yo, machete still stainless. The Archbishop run from the knocks of Chris Biscuit. Plus play the harp, wrist glisten. Goon captain, catch me in Africa. Black down with 4-5 Somalians, black Timbs, rubber suit, Wonder Woman bangles, a blue coupe. I'm usually up on the roof counting mad loot. Root beer, reefer, T-frame, doing my 1-2. Smoking with a plain Jane trooper. Excellent with rifles, out in Japan in a flight goose. Switchblade that poke out the night boots. Flustered on the bullet train with chains on. Getting my train on. Thunder money, make bread, brainstorm. All this is made for the Forbes list. Boys get pissed, say yo, he fucked me out his drawers, he dissed me. All this is calculated. The Batman of the black hand. Mafia money killers who rock sand.
Bone, crushing, smooth. Kicks, blades, chopping, cool, bricks. Master of the weaponry, sells to both clicks. Blacksmith.